It's Wednesday, June 13th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 56 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and on the mics today is John.
Hey.
Chad.
Howdy.
Adam.
Hi.
And Mike.
Hola.
And I would like to start off this podcast by apologizing to all the blind people.
What?
You know, I actually said at the start of last episode, which was, even though it's released a week apart, was recorded about an hour ago, that if you guys, if there's any problems with our sound still, you wouldn't see an improvement until a couple episodes down. Well, that was until I realized about midway through recording that episode that I had some knobs in the wrong position, and I actually did not have auto turned on for one of the channels. So you actually are going to get, I hope, a sound improvement even on this episode from the last episode.
Cool.
And hopefully there will be no more improvements needed.
Hey, you know, that's Fear the Boot. We're always raising the bar.
Well, blind is never going to hear it because I killed him in level 4.
So, what?
Legend of Zelda for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, okay. I didn't ever play Legend of Zelda on Super Nintendo.
I know. That is your... You haven't played any Zelda, have you?
Yeah, I'm playing through Wind Waker.
Okay, yeah.
No, and, you know...
Or not Wind Waker.
Twilight Princess.
Twilight Princess,
you know, I remember when I was a kid, I had Zelda and Link to the Past, and you came over plenty of times and played it. Yeah. Not all the way through.
No,
heavily,
yeah,
but
they were long games. I mean, I'd play like part of a level,
right,
or something, but never.
So you can't
them.
Say you, it's never touched you.
Well, now, back and play Ocarina.
I
will not
do
regret it.
I will play Ocarina, and also now that I've got the Wii thing, I'm going to go back and get the Link to the Past. And
Link to the Past
all
is
that
yes,
stuff,
beyond
so.
Good. Yes.
So I'm going to go get
it. I got to say, I liked Wind Waker more than I liked Twilight Princess. And that's not to say I didn't like Twilight Princess. Twilight Princess was a great, great game.
I've never played any of these.
I love Twilight Princess.
Zelda 1 and Zelda 2, that's it.
I love Twilight Princess. I still haven't finished it.
Yeah.
Zelda 2 was
I
gross.
Finished it. It's pretty good.
Now, Chad, Adam has a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So you've said on the podcast that you can have entire role-playing sessions with no combat.
Yes,
yet you've also
and we've
said,
had them.
Yes, okay.
That's true, we have.
You've also said that you are an avid WoW player.
Yes,
which
I am.
Is nothing but combat.
I've been playing for 2 years. I've been playing since a month after its release.
Can you go ahead and explain the disparity there?
I think that's kind of a false designation, Adam. I think that's like saying you like bowling and you like baseball. Ha-ha!
I agree.
I want to say it like that. I really do. I want,
no,
I want to
because
give that response
because
it's awesome.
It's he always drags on the combat, but... Yeah. WoW is nothing but a dungeon crawl.
Yeah, well,
and tell
different.
Me it's not.
But it's not a
well,
role-playing
okay,
game.
Okay, okay.
No, yeah, it's not a role-playing game, exactly.
Let me put it to you this way. We're assuming like a dungeon crawl, like a tabletop dungeon crawl with no role-playing. I don't like those because, I mean, obviously I like the role-playing and all that, but even going beyond that, you know, you could have a deep dungeon crawl adventure. I mean, there's a lot of depth, there's strategy to it and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth. There's 100 levels in that one.
Oh, yeah. And... The thing is that it to me, it's like sitting around and working out a big word problem in that because it's all mathematics, it's all algebra, but you frame it in a dark, deep dungeon.
If three party members at level 5 enter a dungeon at 12:04 p.m.
A wizard leaves Cormyr going east.
That is exactly how I see it.
20 encounters with an average CR rating of 5 enter the dungeon from the opposite end at 1:15 p.m.
What is the
what
random
is the capital
loot
of
table?
Madagascar?
Yeah, and that's how I see it. I'm not a math person. I'm not really a mathematical type person. And so that sort of the number crunching, not even necessarily min-maxing, but, you know, pulling all the numbers of character creation to get an optimal character that you know, really fits within the framework of the other characters. To me, it's just like I just see numbers, 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 numbers. And I see this huge algebraic formula that you spend the months of the campaign working through. And, you know, I'm boiling it down to its simple thing. I know that it can be deeper than that, but that's why it's not my thing. That's why it's not interesting to me. Whereas WoW, I have even described it as an automated dungeon crawl. There's no role playing in it. There's story in it, but again, that's just the framework of it. But it is a dungeon crawl, but it's
like
also automated.
I like to role play the level 20 alliances that I chain lightning slash dance.
So it seems to
slash
me that
teabag.
The only barrier from you having the combat in your games and enjoying it is the tedium associated with actually doing it. Now, if that tedium went away,
right,
would you be more open to the combat in your games?
Well, my problem with the games that I run, even if I was this math whiz that can work through it and stuff, I just feel that it gets in the way of role-playing. I want combat out of the way so we can get back to the story, the plot line, the characters interacting with each other, interacting with me and my NPCs, and, you know, going through this plot, this story, creating the story with me. That's how I see it.
And, well, I'm trying to work out the ideal situation in which you're actually going to enjoy the combat.
Right. If, like, you can, if you can make some imaginary technology that would facilitate
I have an imaginary technology that makes for very quick combat.
Only you could do almost more with
it
on a role-playing end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I'm trying to work up with this off the cuff and not
do. Well, do you remember that one game that we ran? It was like D&D, and we were doing the weekly thing. I had your party attacked, and we did a combat. And it was that chain demon, the demon that had all the chains, and he can whip around with them and stuff. And it is really creepy. And we started to roll it out, and everybody was like, oh my God, this is so boring.
I think I remember that.
This is so painful. Can we just move on? And I'm like, look, guys, do you guys trust me? And they're like, yeah, we, as a GM, do you guys trust me? And they're like, yeah, we trust you as a GM. I tell you what, will you guys give me 10 minutes to describe to you what happens in this combat? And occasionally I'll be asking, it's like, okay, this and this and this and this, what happens? And they're like, okay, yeah, we'll try that. And what I did is I did this monologue narrative where I just described, they entered the church, this demon covered with all these, you know, chains and stuff, comes down from the ceiling, and I just described this whole combat in very vivid detail. And I took like 10 minutes to do it, and I would get player input, and, you know, it's like, what are you doing? And I would just decide, and, you know, they would get hurt, and, you know, it would be tough for them, and a challenge. The thing is, I took a lot of the control away from the players, but it was just to get through the combat.
I think my problem with
I don't think that I would want to do that. I don't suggest that for anybody, actually. it was good for that one situation, that one time.
Congratulations, folks. You just had your first Chattuck jerk.
My problem with combat in general is that I burn out on it very quickly.
That I can make it through like the second or third round, but then it's just like, can this guy just please die?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't have a problem per se with dungeon crawls. I mean, heck, even Battletech, one of my preferred games, is a very combat heavy game with the map combats. But I find that very quickly, it's like I can really get into it for like one combat. But then after that, it's just like, man, I just get more and more and more bored. And I don't think, I
mean, and you know what, Dan, you're really good at math. You have an understanding of it. You, I don't know. Do you enjoy math?
No, I don't particularly enjoy math, but
you don't work out problems for fun. There are people who do that.
No. Yeah, there are. And no, that person,
your brother is one of them. And Adam's one of them.
Well, yeah. And I know enough people that are really good at math that I have someone to answer all my questions, but no, I made it through multiple years of calculus, but I don't enjoy it, and I don't even remember most of it.
Whereas I made it through remedial math to graduate high school.
We call that math for seniors.
That's right.
Dude, I got you
we
through algebra.
We called that dumb math in my high school.
My freshman year, you got me through algebra.
With George Bob.
Yep.
So
barely.
Yeah, I'll say that for me, it goes both ways. I even have the same problem in video games, that like with Diablo and Diablo 2, I only enjoyed the multiplayer because of the social aspect. Yeah. With WoW, the only thing that kept me involved in the game was socializing with the people that I was playing with. The reason I'm having trouble getting established in EQ2 is because there aren't that many people that are playing it right now that I know.
That's why I love WoW, is because, you know, I have gone through guilds where I've known all the people. It's been this social fun time. And then I've gotten into guilds where they're more active, and there's some socialization, but a lot of activity. And we did a lot of teamwork things, and we made accomplishments and goals, and we did them together, and that was cool. And then I went to a guild again that was more social oriented, and not a lot happened, but it was very friendly and stuff. And then that died. And then now I'm in a sort of casual raiding guild. It's not really a hardcore, you know, no attendance and DKP and all that, but it's a raiding guild nonetheless. And the social aspect is a little bit lower, but the teamwork achievement aspect and the exploration aspect is a lot higher, and I'm enjoying the game. Now, of course, when that Conan MMO comes out, I might drop WoW like a bad habit, but that remains to be seen.
Actually, this kind of ties right into the next thing that we have up here to talk about.
That's why you let me talk about this.
Okay, you want to talk about this?
No, starting the Conan Guild?
Adam talking about things and starting a Conan Guild. There's like a chorus back here.
I know, it's great.
The thing this ties into is RP and combat. Does it have a place, and if so, what is its place?
I spend a round being conflicted over whether or not to hit the orc. Next turn.
You know what's funny? Tying this back to WoW a little bit is that WoW has RP servers where people, you know, they actively RP and seek out RP. A friend of mine was saying, it's like, yeah, he's got a friend in a raiding guild on an RP server. And you know what? When they hit the 40-man raids, no one's RPing.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. You know, I got a warning from Blizzard from an RP server. Have I told this story yet?
No, you haven't.
I said in General Baron's chat, if Vin Diesel is wrong, I don't want to be right. And then, not 24 hours later, I get an email from Blizzard saying that out-of-genre speech in public channels on RP servers is illegal, and that while I'm not going to get locked out this time, I will suffer lockout periods of increasingly long amounts.
Did you go back instantly and say it again?
No, but I stopped playing on the server because if Vin Diesel's wrong, I don't want to be right. True. I'm back on my PvP server, ganking noobs.
I think it is very hard to keep up RP in combat without being cheesy.
I agree.
That, I mean, you're swinging your sword at some monster, you're shooting your gun at some enemy soldier. I think RP has a place because it can help keep you kind of in the flow of the situation. You know, if you just give little things like, oh, crap, you know, I look this way and I look that way and seeing the guy come at me, I just fire two quick shots at his chest. And of course, we know rules wise that boils down to a semi-auto shot, which has such and such rules to handle it. But that quick description gives you some kind of a sense that it's not like I'm role playing and I am so and so from such and such realm. But the minute something attacks me, I become a little figurine that's about an inch and a half tall sitting on a square map who forever has his shield forward and mace raised in the exact same pose.
That's why I don't like to use minis on our combats.
Basically, you know, back in the day when, you know, Adam, John, and I were role playing and such, even when we did your rules, so to speak, like the hardcore for us rules, I always had description add to it. You know, somebody would say, okay, I hit him with my sword. No, you don't. Try that again. What exactly do you do with the sword? Not that I wanted to know that he was going to, you know, flick his wrist and slice off his nipple and then bat the nipple right back in his eye to get a plus one to stab him in the belly button. No, I wanted them to ask.
What a strangely grotesque combat maneuver.
And yet, but I'm convinced it would be effective.
You dream about this at night, don't you?
Oh, you have no idea. But I would have them add something to it every time. You know, nobody in my games could ever just point a gun and shoot it. It always had to be, I do this and I say this. And
you're encouraging hard-ass gaming.
I don't think that's hard-ass gaming. I think that that's quite the opposite. I think hard-ass gaming is I shoot the guy. I shoot him again. Well, what do? He's surrendering. Well, I shoot him in the head.
No, we played wimp-ass gaming, Mike. I shot my guns and most of my characters in the absolute most pitiful way possible.
Yeah. He
in a pool of own urine.
It's great. John's played cowards where the combat starts and he's like talking a big talk and then the bullets start flying and he's instantly diving for cover and running away.
Yes.
And when the smoke clears, he's the first one to stand up. It's like, oh, we got him, boys. Yeah.
I know a
moral support
person who's like that in real life, but it's not at all like that in a game.
Yeah. So it just strikes me that with the RP in combat, if you overdo it, it either will one become cheesy.
Well,
or two, become monotonous.
I think it really depends on what style of game you're running. I think if you're running a highly simulationist game where, you know, you are going through the dungeon crawl and you do have role playing and such, I think that you can say quite the opposite. I think that you can say, well, okay, here's the ancient slime god and all of his slime minions that we have to kill to get the treasure and stop the evil of the slime guy. For these various reasons and character reasons and stuff, you get to a point where you kind of want to kill the guy, and it's just like, okay, bards, put the loot down.
And you just got to say a slime draws near.
Yeah.
A metal slime draws
near. Yes, it does. It does right here.
I think part of RP in combat also has to come from the GM RPing the enemies. And that's something that I have seen in a lot of games where the enemies don't behave very in-characterly, if that's a word.
Uh-oh, that guy's almost dead. He switches targets.
I think, well, I blame video games a lot for this.
Well, I mean, that's part
of it.
He's
blinking.
They have, the enemies have no fear. They have perhaps very minimal strategy. It's, you know, if you're...
I blame bad role-playing games with terrible enemy AI.
All right, guys, you pulled good. They're 5 feet away, but you're out of aggro radius. You can kill this one.
Mage, watch your aggro. My name's not Mage. It's Therodin.
Yeah, whatever.
Shut up, Mage.
Maybe some water.
It's like, you know, if you're in a game where you've got, let's say, a sci-fi game, and it's six guys in the party and versus 5 or 10 bad guy guards, I mean, those guards are just as human as the party is.
Unless they're golems.
But for some reason, they don't get role-played, that they are just kind of these generic, you know, whatevers that have... They have no family back home, no motivations for being there.
Can you take it from the other side? Can you role-play the guards too much?
Yeah, yes. I mean, how much as a GM are you really going to invest in the conflicting personality drives of orc number 5?
And I'm not saying you need like a 500-question personality survey for every generic bad guy.
Well, I think that gets back to one of our old episodes where we're talking about, well, how do you make a good NPC on the fly? Well, you play stereotypes.
And you change them a little.
You change them a little. You come up with one little aspect and you kind of play that up, and then they get popped and you keep going with it. And you know what? Two gaming sessions from now, they've forgot random guard A. They've just capped, and guess what? He's back. They don't know it, but he's back.
I used to do this in the Battletech Mercenaries game I ran. It was all map combat.
Mm-hmm.
When the enemy would charge over the hill in their mechs, I'd make them roll for fear after you guys started plugging them.
Hmm.
Really?
Yeah. And if they like lost, they turned and ran.
Yeah, I've done that a few times. I've used morale rolls. Of course, in some of the games that I've run, I've also done that the other way. I've made the party make morale rolls.
That's devious.
That is
I do that in magical circumstances, but never in regular.
Because no player is afraid of losing 10 hit points. But you can't convince me there are too many real human beings out there that don't have some fear of getting shot or stabbed.
Now, do you think that you can get a really good quality gaming group and to where you say, you know, I don't have to make rolls to see if these guys break or have fear or get angry or lash out? You can trust them to play their characters?
It's possible, but it's damn rare.
Yeah, I'm with Mike. It's possible. I have seen it, but I mean, it is... Loch Ness monster sighting rare. I mean, it is.
I think through IC enforcement, you can get somewhat to that point.
Well, it's like the only way I've ever been able to get that is by having the party so horribly outclassed that it descends into the bad GMing habit of the Richard Pryor game.
And I think that if you want to do that, you should do Cthulhu, where it's set up to where it isn't a Richard Pryor game. The concept is. That I think somebody said this on the forums, the two concepts of Cthulhu is you will not win.
Yeah.
And then number two is the only way you can win is through sacrifice.
Cthulhu as the model of the one game out on the market now that isn't your basic hero fantasy.
Oh, yeah, they asked somebody, and that was
the guy who designed it. Yeah.
Can't remember his
name. And you know what? I really would love to play some Cthulhu.
I've never played it, and I would love to.
Yeah,
what? I mean, you are missing out.
The one time we played it, it was like I don't think it was run with that style in mind. It was run more as like a normal role playing game. I would love to run a game where you could play it, where you go to it with that mindset, with the players have the mindset that you can't win. You're playing normal people. Add all the depth to it. And role play out the fear. And everybody at the table, like we said in the horror genre episode, everybody is down with it. Everybody accepts that they have to be afraid in this game.
I love dark games, and I can't get anybody to play them with me or run them.
I'd love to run them.
I don't enjoy horror.
You don't?
I know, and it's crazy.
Really,
it's all
enjoy
I used to
it
run.
As a fictional genre at all. Books, movies, games, whatever.
Yeah, at all.
And some of our best games that I ran were horror games.
And I won't disagree with you.
Well, I'll say that's going to have to be a little bit, because to give some quick reminder announcements, Gen Con this year, Saturday from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, there is a general reception for...
Mid-episode!
Yeah, mid-episode business. Announcements. There's a general reception for... Our first bumper. There's going to be a general reception for podcasters and their listeners, so we would love to meet you guys. But also... Don't know if it's going to happen, but we are trying to put together some Skies of Glass demo games. I realize we're behind in releasing those resource documents, but progress is being made on the rules, believe it or not. So we're looking at putting together some demo games. So we need to do some play testing on Skies of Glass.
And I have said, whether we do Skies of Glass or whatever, however it works out, there are people who have said that they don't understand how I run a game and they want to see it. There are people who want to meet me at Gen Con and want me to run a game for them. I am perfectly willing to do that. And the more the merrier.
Uh-oh. You didn't think you had fans.
And you know what? And I'm going to run it how I do it. I'm going to go in there with a general idea of mine, take my 10 minutes of Zen beforehand, and then boom, throw down.
We should have the GM peen contest.
And by 10 minutes,
we should show up and be like, all right, all the Fear the Boot hosts are running a game. Oh, who wants to go to who?
Throw to those in D20, my game.
D20 dungeon crawl. All flesh must be eaten. Camarilla LARP. You're going to run some space opera algebra madness.
That's right.
If that's the case, then I've already won.
Next. And
me, I'm going to run the winning game.
I want to talk about something else here that actually in a previous episode, I kind of blew off, and I thought this would be an easy one to blow off, but the more I thought about it, I can come up with some limited use for it.
Snow cones?
What?
Snow cones?
Yeah.
Oh, good God, no. I have tons of uses for snow cones.
What do they Hershey's strawberry syrup.
You know, there's a reason why zero Fear the Boot hosts have cancer. Copious snow cone consumption.
That's what it is. It's visit to the gypsy lady.
That's right. It's nothing but snow cones. No, actually, the topic here, since we're on this big combat binge, which is kind of like a snow cone binge, except less snow cone and more violence.
And this was all spurred by a WoW discussion before the podcast.
Actually, most of these were topics that we had lined out today.
Oh,
yeah. Some of us do plan these episodes. The topic is...
I plan on being wonderful.
Why is everyone laughing?
The best laid plans.
I'm just gonna spit. Random encounter tables. Go.
No.
Maybe.
Dan. What?
Depends.
Burn the heretic.
Has a use.
No, it doesn't.
No,
it doesn't.
No.
Random doesn't imply a use.
Okay, I'm with Mike on the maybe.
Burn the heretics.
Maybe.
Mike,
maybe.
I'm holding the Alternative Player's Handbook right now. Does this have a use? I'm testing your philosophical metal.
Okay, not everything.
Okay. So now we can talk.
Hey, this chair I'm sitting in right now is missing one of its feet.
Okay.
The Alternative Book has a
Does
use.
The Alternative Book okay, have any use beyond its fact that it's a solid object of roughly the dimensions it is? I'm going to say no.
If you need toilet paper.
Toilet paper.
Kindling.
Kindling.
Yeah. It depends. Do you really like sea green?
Okay, I got to say.
Okay, I do like sea green a little bit. Well, I can open up and look at it.
You know what? I got to say that when Alternity came out, I thought it had the awesome, awesome cover because it was the only role-playing game book and really the only book I had seen up to that point to where you can get the player's handbook and the DM's guide and put them together and create this mural.
Yeah, that was kind of neat.
That was really neat.
Yeah, that actually is kind of neat. All right, so let's take the no side before Mike and I give the
That was a
side.
Random encounter itself.
Yes, it was. Pointless and a time
They
sink.
Happen in podcasts. All right, so Dan.
All right, come on.
Mike, your random encounter defense.
Your argument is extremely well laid out. Yeah, and say very this, solid.
This the is argument much. Is it's bad, period. Go.
And then we'll apologize.
It can be useful in some circumstances. Go.
It's a detriment to providing a tailored plot and meaningful combat encounters. Go.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. Now we finally have some real meat to this.
Thank you.
All right.
Bacon, go.
Man, I wish I could go on some bacon.
I had some yesterday.
You know, I'm disappointed. They closed down all the Shoney's around here that had all those all-you-can-eat breakfast bars.
All-you-can-eat bacon.
Do you remember?
Do not tempt me.
We used to, this was back in high school, we used to go up to those Shoney's in the middle of the night and have bacon-eating contests.
Oh, yes, sir.
It was horrible, but it was brilliant. It's the reason I'm not going to live past 60.
I'm so glad I'm not in you guys' generation.
As soon as I die, I'll be looking at that ceiling and I'll be like, oh, Lord, thank you for that bacon.
You're going to wake up in that
show.
But
before it looks like you're trying to dodge
eternity.
The question.
Yeah, before you...
This is bacon.
Last statement was made by us.
That's right.
I know. I just don't want to make it look like our friend is dodging the question here.
All right, so here's why I say maybe. Now, I generally agree with you that in my mind, I think everything within a role-playing game should serve a purpose.
And yeah, just like a book or movie.
Right, exactly. That if you're in a book or movie and they just have this random detour that serves no purpose whatsoever.
You're saving the princess from the dragon. You're going down the road to the dragon's lair. The king has sent you, and you are in his land and is being invaded by kobolds who are in line with the dragon and taking over towns, and you're walking down the road, and all of a sudden, Nazis jump out of the cloud and attack you, because 62 on the random encounter table is frigging Nazis.
The
Wampum
Tree in Harry Potter 2.
Wonderful.
No, no,
thank
no, that
you.
Tree had a purpose.
What purpose?
It sets up in Harry Potter 3, the secret passage to Hogsmeade.
The Wampum Tree.
Oh, okay.
So that tree has
you
a
know,
purpose.
You know, Harry Potter 3, the book I ruined for you?
No, that was six.
That's six.
Yeah, that was book six. I haven't gotten nearly that far yet. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're thinking about starting a snake cult in our the Conan MMO, and we're thinking about calling it Snake Kills Dumbledore.
I thought of that, by the way.
Yeah, he did. And it was brilliant. Anyway, the one place, here's the thing, though. I think everything within the role-playing game has to serve a purpose, and that's why, generally, I would not touch a random encounter chart, because if there needs to be an encounter, well, then there needs to be a particular encounter
yes.
for a particular reason. But
right.
the only time that I would use a random encounter chart is if the players are doing something that could potentially cause them to encounter some, like, for example, one of them says, I've got an herbalism skill. I'm just going to hunt the mountainside for this rare herb. And it's like, all right, there has to be some kind of risk associated with this. I might pull out a random encounter chart.
But
or
that means that
why
you have
couldn't
to do
you just
combat.
Decide in your mind, okay, I'm going to roll this D10, and if it's one or two, they find a
why
lion.
Why can't you just decide in your mind that you do or do not get jumped by a lion or a bear or whatever you want?
Well, because they're asking you on the spot, and here's the thing.
Think of a lion on the spot.
Well, right, exactly. But here's the thing, that if you start thinking of things like that on the spot, sometimes the random encounter charts will take you a new direction. It'll add a little variety.
Oh, he gets attacked by pixies. Yes!
Nazi pixies!
But here's the point. In this situation, what is really the qualitative difference between the lion you invented on the spot and the pixies I rolled on the spot?
Well, hold on. I think we're getting into
one
two different arguments
here. One involves a superfluous generation step.
On one argument, we're arguing, should you have the random encounter at all? And then the other one is, what should you roll the random encounter to be the monster?
Okay, back to the other question of should there be one at all. If your players, for example, are getting complacent, and when you're traveling, they're
nothing
not...
like a good combat to whip them up, yeah. get that blood going.
I'm just saying everything has a purpose. I'm not saying this is a good idea to do in general. But if your players are getting complacent and you need them to be vigilant, why not?
Did you see that DM of the Rings where they were in combat and then it's like 10 rounds later and then like the really Billy badass hard ass guy is snoring at the table and the DM's just rolling against himself.
Oh my God. No, I've not seen it.
Oh, you've got to read DM of the Rings.
So funny.
It's hilarious.
It's brilliant. But nothing whips anybody up into a frenzy like combat.
I see where Mike's coming from, though, because sometimes if the party's getting pompous or sloppy,
yeah,
there's nothing like a sniper to bring them back into.
Here's the thing, though, is that
that's not a combat,
the,
though.
The thing is that sure like, is. We're talking what about
you,
we're
you're
talk-
getting shot at by a sniper doesn't count as combat.
Well, let's say it does or it doesn't matter. The thing is that you're saying that the party is, say, getting complacent. And you want to spice things up. You want, okay, come on, guys, let's start popping. Let's go. The thing is combat's boring.
Well, hold on.
I mean, it's really dull.
Let's go back to the sniper example if you want.
Does it have to be a long combat?
Well, yeah.
It's the exciting short combat.
Well,
I think with the sniper thing, though, it's more of a situational thing. It's not combat at all. That's a role-playing thing because the sniper's not sitting 10 feet away and I can see him.
Let's also segregate our terms here.
It could just be a crazy
There's a
sniper.
Difference between complacent and bored. Okay, yeah. If players are getting bored, I agree with you. A random encounter is not probably the best way.
No, that would not be a solution.
But okay, by complacent,
bore them
what we're more getting at is that they're getting arrogant.
Sloppy is what I mean
well,
by
well, if you okay. said it that way in the beginning,
I think,
as it's a punishment, well, then okay.
I think
it's
not a punishment. If they're getting sloppy and they're getting arrogant, I think that you can use role-playing situation. This is the, I don't spank my kids argument. Yeah, spanking's on. But I think they've
said it's 2 months old. You shouldn't be spanking just yet.
Every
the
day.
Only rule...
I'm practicing. I got a watermelon I practice on.
The only rule book Chad uses for most role-playing games is a big leather belt.
That's right. The thing is, that if they're getting, like, arrogant and they're getting, like, sloppy
larps,
and stuff, I think that you can do role-playing situations to kind of turn that around for them. But I think that if it's arrogance and ego, like the thing that I absolutely hate that I and you used to do all the time, Dan, back in our younger days, is we'd be playing the sci-fi game. And we'd go to the space admiral's desk and we'd kick open his door and we'd slap him out of his chair and take one of his cigars and sit down at the chair. And you would point at the admiral on the floor, cry and say, "This is what I want, bitch." Yeah. And the admiral has no guards. All right, it's like, okay, now it's time to do some smack.
Right. All right.
That's if you are using
the combat, it's time to raise the pimp hand and keep the pimp hand strong.
If you're using the combat to straighten out wayward players, it is not a random encounter anymore. It now has a purpose.
And if you're like, oh, you're so steaming mad, it's like, I can't even think. Flip, flip, roll, roll. Okay, bugbears attack you. We're in space. You don't even have the right manual. I don't care. 10 more bugbears pop out. How you like that?
John, huh? Bugs, what are you doing next Saturday?
With that, I'm down with that.
I think you're missing the spirit of our message, but
no. I hope so.
Punishment
mine is funnier.
I'm not even sure how to respond.
Chad,
to
even giving those two the perhaps unearned benefit of an appropriately set encounter table, I would agree with you that at that point it becomes a purposeful, directed encounter rather than a random encounter.
I'm more referring to timing being random because...
Now, are you guys saying that, okay, we have these situations. We have a list where these sort of unplanned for encounters would be appropriate. Are you saying that, okay, the game comes with a random encounter table and I can use this in this list, within this frame, for my convenience?
Sort of.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it's for me, a random encounter table is very, very rare.
Monster's Manual has page numbers.
No. For me,
that's why it's truly monstrous.
I can't remember what the third edition was, but some previous ones even had random encounter tables in the...
They had them in the Dungeon Master Guide second edition.
Okay, what I more have in mind...
Yeah.
Okay, so our players are traveling from town to town. They're completely complacent, and I need to make sure they have their guard up. I don't mean I'm going to be turning to the Monstrous Manual's random encounter table and all of a sudden, oh my God, they're in the middle of traveling from town to town and they are jumped by water elementals. That is not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is...
You're saying
is,
that it should be Nazi zombie bugbears.
That is exactly what I'm saying. It should be Nazi zombie bugbears. I'm saying I may roll a
nothing
D6.
Like NZB to bring it back.
Yes, that's right. I may roll a D6 to determine when the encounter will occur while they're traveling. Sure. And if it rolls a 6, we've got an encounter because they're complacent and I need to shake them up a bit.
Now,
that is what I'm referring to.
I am going to throw this down and I'm going to sound like Dr. Phil here for a second. I'm going to say, the thing is, maybe it's your fault instead of the players.
Oh my.
Because you need to roll it back. They're going from town to town. Why are they complacent? Is there no threat? Is there no reason for them to be complacent? Maybe you should have built up the story and the role play before they left the first town, because, you know, let's look at Lord of the Rings, the absolute template for all fantasy gaming. Woo! You know, the hobbits left that one town, the Nazgul were after them. They didn't have to encounter anything. It could have been a peaceful, sunny day. If I'm role playing that, my sword is friggin' out and I'm like, walking, I'm like, I have my gun out. It's like, Chad, there's no guns in that game. I don't care. Have you seen those things? You can't kill them.
I'm concerned about timing because if we context it within the plot, if we make it an encounter that I had planned,
right,
and they can predict it, or it's reaction.
I hate to say this again, it sounds like I'm slamming. I don't mean to slam you at all.
No.
But if they can predict it, they're reading you too well, or they stole your notebook.
Which, in
this case, it's time for what? An NZB encounter.
That's right.
Well, but if they're reading me too well, or they're predicting that certain patterns are going to create an encounter, that's why I like the random timing of roll a D6.
And I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But if they are reading you too well, that is your problem.
True.
You need to make yourself more crazy.
The way that I would use them is I would use random encounters to respond to random actions. That, for example, I said the players they're in a wood. I've told them it's dangerous. One of them goes wandering off for no particular reason.
Okay.
At that point, like I said, I mean, yeah, you could make up on the spot it's a line, but rolling
around. Yeah, and like I said earlier,
is not random, though.
Like I said earlier, you know, we have this short list of where it would be, you know, totally acceptable, totally fine. Is the random table a matter of convenience?
Right.
That, and you know what? Hey, what a game master comes to the table with a toolbox, conceptually or physically. Or a hammer for Phil physically. To beat him. And
I don't remember the last time I showed up with a toolbox.
You know, the toolbox could be your little messenger
prepared.
Bag. Or it could be like
Adam's. I don't have a Merce.
It could be like Adam's Merce with his two gaming books in it. You know, all gaming masters should have a toolbox. And it's a mental list in their head of actual things that they can turn to in times of need. And if that's one of the things that you need, hey, FTB compliant right there, more power to you. I still don't use them. My whole thing is that I think that a game master should be the type of person who is quick on their feet, spontaneous. Even if they do huge, planned out, detailed notes game, don't do a style like I do, I still think that you have to be able to think on your feet and think quick. Because
reality is every game master is going to have flaws.
I totally agree.
My major flaw is that I'm too... that the players can read me too well.
Yeah.
That's easily counteracted by all the dice.
And you know, I agree. You know, and my idea, it's Pollyanna, it's a perfect world. You know, and life, you're right, life doesn't work like that. So, yeah, like I said, random encounter tables, if you need them, put them in your GM toolbox.
And that's my point, is that they serve a purpose, not that I should
They serve them. A purpose in some situations to some people.
My toolbox is to point really far away and say, oh my god, it's Rutger Hauer. Run back to my room, get the Sunless Citadel, and come back before they turn around.
If Rutger Hauer was chasing me, I would scream like a little girl and run. I would
and run up and get his autograph.
I would run that's up right.
too. I would too. I'd run towards him.
Now, my problem with random encounters
is the combat.
Well, okay, combat aside, we all know my views on combat. My problem with random encounters is the GM who uses a random encounter every single game, and he uses it at specific points. Okay.
We haven't had our combat quota this game.
Yeah. You're traveling outside the safe zone of the castle, fortress, space station, whatever.
And all of a sudden the screen shatters and there's your three party members. Yes.
Time to kill a bugbear.
You killed.
We have so many musicians on the forum. One of them needs to make us the Nazi zombie bugbear theme song.
That would be awesome.
My God.
March of the NZBs.
I want a graphic. I want a graphic of the army.
Oh, we could make a YMTD, a Fear the
Blue YMTD.
YTMND.
Oh, that's far too many letters.
Your man, the dog now.
You guys are lucky I can remember NZB. I'm far too spontaneous to remember things like letters.
You know what the punishment is for not remembering NZB?
What?
It's NZBs.
No, more. We're drowning in them.
Can anybody make us a graphic of Nazi zombie bugbears? That would be very cool.
You know, we could make it a
theme song. Ooh.
Hopefully,
ooh, you know contest. What? We haven't
their
had
their own TV show.
We haven't had a contest in a while, Dan. Is the Fear the Nazi Boot prize closet? Bears. Does it have a t-shirt or a mug in it?
Yeah, if somebody wants to send us a Nazi zombie bugbear thing, then
how about we
army of Nazi zombie bugbears?
How about we make this a contest? And I'll put this on the table. Keith Curtis cannot enter. If he wants to throw one in, of course, we'd love to see it. But he cannot enter because he won the last art contest. If somebody can make us either a Nazi zombie bugbear theme song or a Nazi zombie bugbear illustration.
Oh, both would be awesome.
Both would be awesome. You'd get more points. But, you know, that's not a requirement. We understand that, you know, not everybody's musical and art, you know, can draw.
Yeah, that's pretty demanding.
Get it to us in 2 weeks.
Oh, man. When's this episode going to be released?
Yeah.
We'll make the cutoff on this Monday, July 2nd.
Oh, what a perfect Independence Day present to us all. Yes. Nazi zombie.
A reminder of why we're free.
Monday, July 2nd. We'll make it sometime like around noonish Central Time, because we'll record an episode that evening so we can give a winner then.
Let's lay the rules out one more time. We want an illustration of somehow a bunch of, or a single, or whatever, somehow involving a Nazi zombie bugbear.
Right.
Or a Nazi zombie bugbear theme song.
Right.
We need this by
Monday, July 2nd, around noon Central Time.
The Fear the Boot hosts will vote on a winner. We will announce it on the next podcast, and the winner will get one item out of the Fear the Boot store.
Right. Anything you want, and we will send your way. And you know what? We'll do one of each. We'll do a winner for the song and a winner for the Nazi zombie bugbear picture. And you can either post your entries in the contest forum.
Yeah, I'll make a thread for this in the comment
forum. Or you can email it to me at dan@feartheboot.com, yep, and I will post it up there for
you. Dan, is there any copyright thing? Do we have to get permission to use it?
Well, whatever you send us, be sure that you're giving us permission to use, number one. And number two, also be sure you own it.
Don't go to the D&D Monsters Manual and find Bugbear and Zombie and Photoshop them.
Yeah, don't go out there and remix the latest hip-hop song about Nazi zombie bugbears. And, yeah,
just 50 Cent's got a new one about NZVs, man. Does. Putting the man down is what they are.
That's right. Who's down with NZV?
Yeah, so, you know me.
The ODB was. That's why they put him down.
That's why they bit.
ODB was down with NZB. So, anyway, don't be sending that in. Man,
sometimes we're so brilliant, I laugh.
There's where we need that sound effect again for brilliance being launched forth from a birth canal.
I'm telling you guys, until you get me my morning show soundboard, this ain't gonna happen.
Actually, this mixer does do sound effects, but
no way.
Wait.
We've played with that before.
Yeah, we have played with that before. Oh. Not during the episode, but anyway. Well, I'm shocked. We're actually not even halfway through the topic list here, and I can't believe we got this much juice out of RP and combat and random encounters.
Yeah, Mike and I are actually going to duke it out after the show.
That's cool. We need to discuss Power 16?
No, there's nothing to discuss, because here's the thing. By the time this episode is recorded, we will have had a winner from the first bracket, but we're recording this a week in advance, so I don't know what that winner is, because voting hasn't even occurred yet. So
continuum.
You know, when we had that episode about time travel, this
next
is exactly
on Fear the Boot,
we
Stephen Hawking.
next episode, we will have the second round of the Power 16, which includes people such as Vin Diesel, Bill Cosby, Christopher Walken, the Hardvark, Phil, Don Shadowrun, inventor of Shadowrun, Kane, and Baron Von Badass. So that's up for the next time around.
And, we haven't said it yet, but there's the Rifts League and the Shadowrun League. And the commissioner of the Shadowrun League is Don Shadowrun.
Of course, right.
And the commissioner of the Rifts League is Mr. Body Massage Man.
Right.
Mr. Body Massage Machine Man, I'm so sorry.
Mr. Body Massage Machine, because...
But that
massage
doesn't mean they'll win. You know, the commissioner of baseball has the Brewers.
Right.
Body Massage Machine against Batman, so it's anyone's game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, nothing, though, says to me riffs quite like, who wants a body massage?
Maybe I've misjudged riffs.
So, since we're rolling right along here, we've got two related topics here, and I'm thinking we're going to hit one this episode, and the other is going to be saved for next time. And it's two angles of player isolation or player character isolation. And by that, I mean that one player character is dragged away from the rest of the party.
Because he's stinky.
And I'm going to take the easier of the two, or the one that I think is simpler to talk about, which is involuntary. So what I'm talking about is, for example, let's say there's party infighting and one of the player characters ends up confined to their quarters. Or let's say, for example, one of the player characters does something a little stupid and ends up picked up by the police. So for some reason, you've got a party of three or four player characters and one of them is away from the rest of the party. How do you deal with that? Because instantly, in my mind, you've got a problem.
Are we suggesting that this occurred not because there was like a John situation? One of the players went off to Rome, so we put him in solitary.
Involuntary.
Everyone's still around the table.
The player character who is, this is happening to, did not want this to happen.
Here's the thing.
And they are present.
I have found that as a game master, I never have to initiate this. This always happens every game completely on its own through the actions of the players.
Right. Cancer also happens on its own.
Yes. So. And you know what? Most of my games is just jumping through hoops of flaming fire to actually get the frigging party together in one spot.
Yes.
Let's put this back on the players, though. As a player, you need to be considerate of this situation.
Yeah. On one hand, you want to do the IC thing and all that. And on one hand, you want to have the spotlight, too. But, you know, it's a hard road to travel because you want to do the team thing, but you're not a group mind. And you are playing an individual and you want that individual to shine. So sometimes that requires the players to kind of step away from the party for a little bit.
Well, let's put the argument on the table. I'm going to talk in front of you, Mike.
That's fine. Go ahead.
I'm in the mood, too.
I'm used to it.
Let's put the argument on the table.
It's fiery.
Do you think that it is better to play it IC or to play it to the party?
Well, hey, remember, we're talking involuntary. We're not talking voluntary. You're not choosing to walk away.
Well, here's the thing.
You're being drug away.
Here's the thing.
Involuntary in terms of what? In terms of the other characters?
No. Any of the ball.
No, it's never 100% involuntary. It's always on somebody. Either the game master caused this and you need to address game master issues or non-issues. You know, maybe this was a good thing. Or it is something that the players have made the game master do. You slap the admiral of the fleet out of his chair and the guards came and dragged the player away.
But this is a consequence. This is not, I'm leaving you guys to go do my own thing.
Yeah, right.
This is a consequence of something I'm
doing. By involuntary, I agree with you. You always probably, maybe not always, you probably did something to cause this. But you do not want this. It's not like you said, you guys are in the city, I'm going to wander the woods.
All right. And the situation of the plot happened, and now the game master has to get you guys back together, and the players have to try and get back
together. Right, and typically this is a problem because, number one, you're now having to split your attention, and number two, typically the person who is isolated away from the plot in prison or
and let's
whatnot
say that there's IC
is getting
things.
Very frustrated.
Let's say that there's IC things going on, too.
Absolutely.
You know, where okay, you got a player in the prison, and
the player in the prison's a thief, and there's a paladin of the party. Everybody in the party's like, we gotta go get this guy, and the paladin's like, no, he's getting what he deserves.
Yeah, and does the paladin say, okay, I've got to take it for the team, and I've got to scale this back, or do I play it IC and I play it up?
Right.
My view is play it IC.
Ooh, my view is always go with the team.
Nah, because the whole thing is
my view is play it IC.
Play it IC because you're making a story. If you were reading a book or watching a movie and you saw this thing play out and you saw that paladin blow character, you'd be like, this is such
bullshit. But I would say that's the difference is with a movie. A movie's being made for the entertainment of the consumer. The role-playing game is being made for the entertainment of the actor. And that's the
difference.
I don't
want to be the guy in prison.
That if in a movie a guy goes to prison and stays there because it's part of plot continuity, that's fine. Because,
I'm not saying that you should leave the guy there to rot.
Right. And
but
I guess that's kind of what I would say. I think it's you can't blow complete IC-ness because if you do, what does character mean anymore?
You have to scale it because if we have a character who's doing just crazy stuff that's endangering the game or endangering your mission,
that's when you
or whatever else
is it out of character stuff or
in character stuff.
Let's say in character we're on a quest.
Yeah.
Let's say we're playing D&D and we're on a quest, and Adam is doing something that is jeopardizing the success of our quest.
Not
to
out of
me,
the ordinary.
That is you have to play that IC and you need to deal with Adam. Now, ideally, you do it in a peaceable way so that you don't have OOC problems.
Or you do it in a non-peaceable way.
If you have to, but to what extent possible, keep it friendly. But you got to resolve the problem because in this case, your quest is at jeopardy and that's a big IC issue. If on the flip side, Adam's not really causing any harm, he has this thing happen to him because he just, you know, he's in the wrong place at the wrong time and gets picked up because, you know, he gets mistaken for a thug. And yeah, you've got a paladin in the party or whatever, and it's just kind of like, well, Adam wasn't really causing any harm to the situation.
Well,
then
I think that
then maybe you need to side with the problem.
I think that situation, there isn't really much of a conflict because everybody's on board.
Well, what I'm hearing here, too, in a lot of these examples is the problem comes down to, I'll give the paladin example. Paladin is a very, very black and white, the example paladin where he's a very, very black and white, good and evil type of person.
Yeah.
You know, this situation happened, I have to act like this, I will continue to act like this. Guess what? People aren't like that. People have nuance, people have shades of gray, and, you know, I'm not saying you have to even put a spin on how you play your character, but, you know, there is always wiggle room. There's always room to work and role play out and take it in a direction through role playing, through the through GM NPC involvement and through player character involvement. I think that you can also say, okay, everybody time out. Now, out of character, let's talk about this. Joe, he's in prison, and unless we get him out, he's going to spend the next 30 years there and rot. We have these issues about breaking him out. Joe's a bad guy. We know he's a bad guy. He wrote his character to be a bad guy, and we're good guys. But we need to have Joe out. Out of character, we need to have Joe out. Let's work together. How can we, in character, get this going?
I think agree. There's two bridges you got to cross there. Bridge one is to accept this is a problem. You cannot leave them in there because you're just frustrating the human being.
It is That's exactly right. the same as killing them.
Yeah.
You might as well kill them and have them reroll.
Because at least then they're back in the game. The second thing I would say is that you've got to look at what... the character problems that cause this. Let's keep torturing the paladin and the thief example. If that thief is thrown in prison because he's stealing, the paladin, without completely busting his character, is not going to go break him out of jail. But you see, okay, well, there's the issue. The issue is that the thief's outside of the law, the paladin's inside the law. How can we resolve that?
And neither character is deep enough to have any room to roleplay within that. So that's the problem I think.
At that point, the game master could do something like, for example, the mayor of the town comes down to the thief and says, you know what? I know what you did is wrong, but hey, you showed some skill. If you will go help me scout out an orc camp nearby, I'll give you a full pardon. And so now all of a sudden the in-character issue that was bothering the paladin of this guy's breaking the law, you've now suddenly pardoned him and put him on the right side of the law. And ideally, if you've had this out-of-character conversation, Joe, who's playing the thief, is going to play ball with that. And
you know,
not.
Man. And I think that if you make this group together and you actually do a group template,
exactly,
this sort of thing can really help, because you can look at the group template. You can look at why these guys are together in the first place. And again, a group template does not mean everybody has to hold hands and be happy together. You can have the conflicts. You can have the tension, but
you
have a way to work them out. You have a way to work together. And you can go back to that as a guide. And like I said, the example I keep hearing, well, the thing I keep hearing in all these examples is someone will not budge and the other person will not budge. Either they're completely evil, or they're completely good, or this factor.
Or they're completely imprisoned, so their opinion doesn't much matter.
Yeah, you know, and it's like this force in the characters completely prevents this. Or the GM, through the force of the NPCs, make them nuanced. Make them to where a paladin does not have to be 100% good all the time. You know, that's kind of a weird thing to say, but come on, these people are human.
No, I think
there has to be some room.
Maybe you play him as the super zealous type who, in the pursuit of whatever mission they were on, is totally willing to sap a few guards and break a guy out of jail for a petty crime for the greater cause.
Or better yet, have the paladin go to the jailer and say, look, there's good in this man, and I see it, and I can vouch for him. And if you'll release him, I'll make sure that he stays on the right side of the law.
But what if the paladin's the one who threw him in jail in the first place?
Well, okay.
Then
you know, I mean, and then guess
great
what?
Great role play, but...
Guess what? You have to role play around that. That's where some of the fun of the game. The fun of the game is not just in the GM's plot. The fun of the game is also in the interaction of the characters in situations like this, where, again, drop it to OOC. I drop it to out of character and say, okay, Joe's in jail. Joe's mage Tharmgood is in jail. And, you know, you guys don't want to break him out because, you know, Team Kickass here is, you know, too good for him. How do we resolve this? How do we do this? You know, Larry, your guy's like this. Maybe you see it this way. And Joe, Bob, your guy's like this. And because we have to have a girl in here so that we're not sexist.
Cool,
you know,
it's my mom.
John's mom, thanks for the lasagna. And since you brought lasagna, you can play now. You know, how do you feel about this? And everybody get a dialogue going, work it out. And it's just like, don't make a script. But when you got it kind of a plan worked out, like, okay, in character time, start role playing, go. And you know what? You can bulk out an entire session like that,
and that's really cool. I think if you've hit a point where one party or both parties is so immovable the thief is just so thiefy and the paladin is just so paladin-y that neither is going to budge.
Time for a character rewrite.
Say you probably have a character that is so shallow or a group template that is so poorly worked out or not worked out at all that I the game's broken.
Yeah.
I mean, you've broken the game in a way it cannot be salvaged.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, so we said this even when we did the group template episode, and I'd still say it today, that I think 90% of what breaks most games comes from the group template.
Yeah.
So,
which is why, you know, Fear the Boot, when we play, we never use a group template. And then we always end up regretting it. Yeah, we always end up regretting it. We always end up with these stories that we can come to the mic with. So,
and by the way, I want to apologize to all the Italian Americans that we offended by insinuating that you must be in your kitchen making lasagna.
Yeah. No.
I am the Italian American of the table.
And John's mom makes.
My mom is the one who makes the lasagna.
Lasagna.
There you go.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So.
And you don't apologize for apologizing about the Italian American.
Okay, exactly. I accept your apology about that.
And Adam is a real lasagna connoisseur.
All right. So, for our Italian listeners, go make lasagna. For the rest of you guys,
va bene.
We will catch you next time.
Ciao tutti.
Bad bastard.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.